All right, so for those of you who drive, I know there's a number of you who drive in this room, and have you noticed this? I've noticed this in myself. It goes something like this. When I was first learning to drive, by the way, I was absolutely terrified of driving in this country. The roads are like about half the size of the roads in America, okay? It's a break to drive in America. It's quite frustrating and scary to drive here. And so you're very alert and you're very cautious at first. You're constantly scanning around. You're constantly looking behind yourself, making sure there's not a car coming, and being very careful what you're doing. And then you go and you have a test, and usually you fail the first test, the driving test, and you're even more worried, okay? And you go and finally you pass the test, and you are very careful every time you get on the road. But then time passes and you get confident. I've done this before. I know what I'm doing. I don't need to be as worried and to scan carefully. I don't need to do any of those things. And so you become maybe even a bit prideful. And so the other day I was driving down an open road, a motorway, and I was absolutely positive. I had turned onto it. There was no one behind me. I knew. I was confident. And as I'm going forward, there's a vehicle in front of me that is going about 15 miles an hour, kind of stopping a little bit and then starting up again. I don't know what they're doing. And so I thought, right, I'll do what I've seen other people do here. I'll just zip right around that person, okay? And I start to turn into the other lane, and just a little voice in the back of my head said, ought you to even look? Just maybe you ought to just look and see if there's a car where you're about to turn. And so I just did the slightest little glance because I'm sure my mirrors would have caught it. And there, my blind spot, there was a car right there. It was so close. I almost hit it. I swerved back out of the way. And that car, it had zoomed up really in my defense. It had zoomed up and it zoomed right past me and then it was all over the place. I think they were trying to evade someone. But that overconfidence, right? I know how to do this. I know how to do this. That pride. And that blind side that I couldn't see, I nearly got in an accident. And so this is actually a serious thing that we can become complacent and we think that we have things together, and then it could cause like a major, major accident. Like people could die. That's the danger of pride. Now we're looking at today at this interesting story in the Bible. And speaking about pride, that's the major issue that the Pharisees have to seeing Jesus here. And in our world, pride is something that we celebrate. Personal pride, that is something that we celebrate. That is something that we hope will be ours in greater amount than it currently is. We might be living in the hopes that in a later day, more people will think well of us, and we ourselves will think more well of ourselves. And we're living for that. And yet the Bible comes along and says, this is a dangerous thing. This is a bad thing. This is something that you want to be free of. And in this story, the whole point of the story is that their pride is going to keep them from seeing their nose, as it were. They're not going to be able to understand or perceive anything because of what they subtly believe about themselves and subtly believe about life, that they are very good. And yet, also on the other side, we see that there's a person here who's humble, and that humility reveals who Jesus is. So here's the big idea for our story. Pride keeps us from understanding Jesus. Pride keeps us from understanding Jesus, but humility reveals him. So summarizing, let's just open our Bibles. We're in John chapter 9. It's page 1075. I'm not going to be able to cover every verse or anything like it. I just encourage you to follow along as you can and then to reread this during the week as part of maybe your quiet times. So we're going to start looking at these first verses, verse 1 through 16. And what we see actually is that Jesus manufactures a situation which will confront the leaders with their blind spot and with their bias. That's what he's doing here. Okay, and so let's just talk about what happens here. The disciples and Jesus are going along, and they encounter a blind man blind from birth, okay? Now, in the religious system and the popular notion of that day, the one that the Pharisees believe, the one that the leaders receive, this man deserved his blindness, okay? This is what they would say. He did bad, so he got bad. He was naughty, and so he got coal in his stocking for Christmas, as it were, okay? This notion, because they believed, their basic conception is they had this giant to-do list of rules. And if you did X, Y, Z, you do all these rules that we've created, you will be rewarded. You will get something good. And on the other side, if you don't do them, then stuff you're going to suffer. Okay? And so this is the common world religious system today, isn't it? This is basically what people do. You earn, they think you earn the good stuff. You do the right things, you're going to get something good out of it. It's not unlike karma, perhaps. You know, I do some good, I get some good. Or the idea that, you know, we can use our energies to bring us all these nice things. You know, you do stuff, you get stuff. This is not in the Bible, okay? This is not a Bible idea. There are many very, very large and wealthy churches that follow this exact idea. Following Jesus, they say, will make you healthy, wealthy, and wise, and you'll get the Maserati, and everything will be great. That's a lie. That's a lie. Christians do not deserve anything. They get grace. And God is also not our little genie in the bottle that we just, you know, get him to do the things that we want. Well, so this world system, it seemed to work for them, but it really caused people who were suffering further abuse, because now they're being blamed for the condition that they're in. That's a really sad thing, isn't it? They go to a person who's suffering and they say, "You did this to yourself. Your own choices." It's compassionless. It's judgmental. It's nasty. We're tempted to live life by this principle as well, aren't we? Think about Trump. He almost got assassinated, right? What if he did? What if Trump got assassinated? There would be people that would say, "God judged him." That's what they would say. "Look, God got him." I mean, we're all tempted to think this when something goes wrong with somebody. We're tempted to think maybe they deserved it. Maybe God is giving them what's coming. The Bible would tell us to be cautious about thinking that sort of thing. Now, here it says that the blind man has been blind from birth, and the disciples believe this idea that the Pharisees are pitching. Just do a bunch of things, you'll be good, you'll be healthy. And so this brings up an interesting question for them. It's kind of a head-scratcher, you know? Which was the naughty person here? Was it the parents, or is God proactively zapping this man because he knows what he's going to do later, so he's going to punish him before he's even born? And so we just really want to encourage you not to do this, not to judge people who are suffering, because we are received by grace. And often in the Bible, as we look at it, the holiest people, they suffer the most. That's what the book of Job says. Look what Jesus says, verse 3, that Jesus speaks to the issue. He says, "Neither this man nor his parents sinned, but this happened so that the work of God might be displayed in him. As long as it's a day, we must do the work of him who sent me. Night is coming when no one can work. While I'm in the world, I am the light of the world." So Jesus is going to give a reason for suffering. Actually, the reason for allowing suffering. God is going to allow suffering. Why does he allow suffering? And the answer is that through that suffering, Christ may be known. That's the answer that's given. Through the difficulty, the grace of God would become apparent and we would believe on Jesus Christ. And see, that's all that matters in the long run. I know that you think that life is the most important thing ever, but it's not actually. It's just a little drop in a bucket and eternity is coming. And so the most important thing really is that you know Jesus. And so God even allows suffering so that the glory of God might be displayed through it. And it says here, what are we learning? The light of the world. Jesus is the light of the world. And so there's this picture. Since Jesus is the light of the world, he can take someone who's in complete darkness and open their eyes. And this is not just physical. He's really talking about spiritual, and he's really talking about us. We who are in darkness, he can open our eyes to the light. And so this is what God does. He twists evil and suffering, he twists it for good, okay? And it shows himself in it. Now here's the kicker, okay? He's now going to do this. He's going to now heal this person, but he's going to do it in such a way that it's going to cause a fight. And he's picking a fight, okay? So in verse 6 through 7, he heals the man, but he heals them in an odd way, okay? This is a really weird thing that Jesus does. Not normal at all. Normally, Jesus says, be healed according to your faith, and then they're healed, okay? That's what he normally does. But here, he spits on the ground, ew, right? And he makes some mud, and he applies it to the guy's eyes, and then he sends the guy quite a distance to wash. This is not normal. What is he doing? And we're told, verse 14, that all of this takes place on the Sabbath, and that's the clue. Okay. So now, in the Bible, there's just one rule on the Sabbath, and we talked about this in early December, actually. I think it was late November. We talked about the Sabbath and how it points to Christ. But when we looked at that, we talked about the one rule that God gives us in the Bible to do on the Sabbath is just do no work. Where work is your day job. The things that you do to survive, don't do those things. So don't cook. That's part of surviving. Don't raise crops. That's part of surviving. Don't, if you are a tent maker, don't make tents on Sunday. Okay, that's the one rule. But in this religious system that the Pharisees have created, the do-good rules, they took this one rule and they added thousands of rules. Thousands and thousands of rules. You can not switch off the light, or you can switch off the light. You cannot hold something above your head, even if it's raining, no umbrella for you on Sabbath. They made tons and tons of rules. And so one of these rules was don't make clay. Don't make clay. So that's what Jesus did. Don't walk too far. Jesus sends him. Huh? Don't wash on the Sabbath for hygiene. Okay, they actually allowed you to wash in a mikvah if you were going to go to the temple or something else, but you couldn't just wash just to be clean. No, that's work. That's work. And so Jesus has just cut three of their rules, right, and thrown them on the floor, stamped on them, and said, do you want to fight? That's what he's doing. Let's have a go here. He's picking a fight. Now, why does Jesus do that? The reason is because this system that they've created isn't from God. And it's their glory, and it's their pride, and it's keeping them from seeing him. He's about to catch them in a little trick, and we're going to see that in a second. He's forcing the issue front and center. This is what you've done, and it's keeping you from seeing things right, okay? So now let's see, the Pharisees now, they're going to begin to try to twist the situation and say, no, it doesn't look like what it is. It doesn't look like what this would normally mean. Okay, so when the man goes home, his friends are completely gobsmacked. They're flabbergasted to see him not begging. It's a beautiful scene, isn't it? And it's so unbelievable. They say, maybe you're not the guy we knew. And he's like, you know it's me. Good grief, you know it's me. And they're like, well, who healed you? And he goes, some guy named Jesus? I didn't see him or anything. And then they take him to a synagogue, to the leaders, to the Pharisees. And it's this joyous scene that suddenly turns dark. They bring to the religious authorities. How are the authorities going to see this wonderful news? Verse 16 here. Some of the Pharisees said, this man is not from God, for he doesn't keep the Sabbath. But others asked, how can a sinner perform such signs? So they were divided. I don't know if this has ever happened to you, where you're talking with somebody and then they decide that they want to try to convince somebody else to do something. And so they say, Tim and I were just talking and we both agree that we should do this. And you're like, hold on, I didn't say to do that. Why are you putting words in my mouth? That's like what they do here with God. I mean, they're like, God, he's breaking the Sabbath and this is God's Sabbath. God is against him. He's not from God. And God's like, wait, hold on. You're not, Jesus isn't breaking my Sabbath. These aren't my rules he's breaking. You know, this is your, don't lump me in with your lot. They're trying to corral God into their system, right? You're not just breaking our traditions. You're against God. The Pharisees are in deep trouble here. Because in the Bible, no one ever caused somebody who's blind to see. That's not something that happened. And then as the scriptures go along, it talks about the Messiah. And it says the Messiah will open the eyes of the blind. This is a calling card for the Messiah. It says if somebody opens the eyes of the blind, that person is from God, and that person is the Messiah. And they're in deep, deep trouble now because he seems to have just snubbed their tradition, and God has approved of it. They're forced to deal with their blind spot. That was the idea here. They're in trouble, okay? Pride keeps us from understanding Jesus, but humility reveals him. So now we see verses 18 through 34 now. This pride is going to progressively blind the Pharisees until they just can't see facts or reason at all. And humility is going to help the blind person progressively to know Jesus and to see who he really is, okay? So we have this weird dark turn in these verses here. This joyful scene has changed into an interrogation. That's what's going on. It goes from joy to an interrogation. There's these angry questions that are being directed toward this poor man who's blind. He doesn't even know. You know, like, what did he do exactly? Well, he anointed my eyes. And well, how did he open them? I don't know. What are you guys getting at here? You, there's something wrong with you. I'm just telling you what happened. It's just like this poor guy is being interrogated. They threaten his parents, verse 19. They threaten him, verse 24. They abuse him and curse him by God. That's what's really in those verses in verse 28 when it says they mistreated him. They abused and cursed him by God. And then verse 34, they revile him, they rebuke him, and they excommunicate him. They excommunicate him, which means they're saying, you cannot come to synagogue. You don't belong in God's people. And this would be something that people, all of his neighbors, all of his friends, even his parents, from that point on, they would say, we don't have anything to do with you. You've been excommunicated. See, these guys look like mobsters. That's what they look like, right? Mobsters don't care about the truth, do they? They just care about getting what they want. And that's what pride does to us. It makes us do awful things that we wish we hadn't done. We can't believe the things that we do for our arrogance. Have you ever found yourself lying because of pride? Why did I say those things? Because I wanted to look good. Wow, that's shocking that we would do that. You ever thought to yourself, I'll apologize, and you get to the moment, and it won't come. It's pride. Pride makes us do really terrible things. It's not innocent. And here, they're just absolutely tearing into this poor guy for something wonderful that has happened to him. They're also delusional, okay? They're delusional. Everybody knows what has happened here. A miracle has occurred through the power of God. They cannot believe their eyes. It's absolutely a riot. The guy is brought before them and they say, this man is born blind. It's all his friends. Yeah, here's Bob. Bob says he never could see and now he can see. And you know what happens? They go, this is all a lie. You guys have concocted it. You guys came to us and lied to us. Let's go get his parents. And now they're like cross-examining the parents. That's not working out. Then they get the guy back and they said, let's hear your story again carefully so we can try to put holes in it. Like this is what police officers do. They make you retell the story. Tell it again. Tell it again. I don't think so. You're lying. It's really awful how they cannot see what is dead simple. By the way, atheists, same sort of thing, actually. I was an atheist, so I can bash away at this. I thought, I've got a knockdown case. God doesn't exist. I know it. Everybody who's smart knows this. I don't know what your guys' problem is. I was completely delusional. I didn't know any of the facts, and the facts were completely against me. That's the sort of thing that pride does. And then lastly, with their behavior, they are telling a lie to themselves. They are pretending that they believe the Bible and that they want to do the things in the Bible. They don't believe it. They don't want to do what's in there. They say that they believe Moses, that they follow Moses. It's absolutely hilarious. In the Greek, it looks like they elevate Moses above God. And we wonder why that would happen. Why they would elevate Moses above God. And the answer is that in worshiping Moses, they're worshiping themselves. Right? And then they say, look, just give you an example of their fakeness. Verse 34, they're saying to the man as they're about to cast him out, "You were steeped in sin at birth. How dare you lecture us?" And they threw him out. The idea that somebody is born in sin is all through the Bible. Psalm 51, verse 5, David speaking, "In sin I was born. In sin my mother conceived me." The message of the Bible is that we're all in sin and that Christ is our Savior to save us out of that sin. But they don't like that. They like to think that they've done a pretty good job. They like to think that that guy, he got what he deserved. But us? No, we're good. We're holy. We're better than everybody else. You see what pride has done to them? Now, the whole way through, they are trying to deter the blind man from believing in Jesus. And it's having the opposite effect. Okay? They're trying to do something, and actually the reverse is happening. And so let's just see the progression of humility that takes place here. Okay? So verse 17. They say to him, "Who's Jesus, since he opened your eyes?" And he says, "Jesus is a prophet." Now, before, if you look back, he just said that Jesus was a man. There was a man named Jesus. Now it's progressed. He's a prophet. He's a prophet. Verse 25, they're trying to manipulate him. They're telling him that he didn't really get healed and that he needs to tell the truth. It's really a sad scene. And the man says, "One thing I do know, I was blind, but now I see." Really wonderful words. This is the basics of our faith. We are in darkness, and Christ is the one who makes us see. The wheels are turning now in his head, and he's beginning to see that Jesus is what I needed. Jesus is what I want. He goes on the offensive, actually. Verse 27. He says to them, "I told you already, don't you? And you didn't listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you want to become his disciples too?" He's baiting them. He knows that that's going to set them off. He actually knows the whole gang. He knows that they're jealous of Jesus and that they're wrong. Verse 30. This is just amazing what he comes to. The man answered, "This is remarkable. You don't know where he comes from, yet he opened my eyes." We know that God does not listen to sinners. He listens to the godly person who does his will. Nobody has ever heard of opening the eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. Do you know what this is? This is exactly what they should have thought. The blind man says, the one formerly blind says the thing that these intelligent, learned scholars should have immediately thought. He comes to it, they don't. What does he have? Now, this is a person who's never read a page of Scripture. This is a person who sat on the outside of the synagogue and begged money and was not allowed in. How did he come to this? What does he have that the Pharisees don't? Do you know what he has? It's actually what he doesn't have. He doesn't have pride. In his whole life, he's been told he's the least. And you know what? That serves him very well. Because in that place, he can see Jesus clearly. We need to realize that we can't see. We need to realize we need help. That's the very best thing that could happen for you. I can't do it. I am confused. Won't someone help me? And into view comes Jesus, the Savior. Pride keeps us from understanding Jesus, but humility reveals him. Last thing to note, this picture of the prideful being blinded by their pride and the humble seeing Jesus and coming to life, it's a universal principle. It will apply to every single person in this room. That's how it's going to work, okay? And this is what we see in verses 35 through 41. This is how our passage ends. So the formerly blind man, he now sees the truth, okay? Now Jesus helps him to see. Jesus appears to him and he says, do you believe in the Son of Man? This is a wonderful moment, by the way, when he sees Jesus, okay? And he connects the voice with the one who's healed him, okay? He's been put out of the synagogue. And he says, well, who is the Son of Man? Just so you guys know, the word Son of Man, that's the terminology for the Messiah. So do you believe in the Messiah, says Jesus. And he says, well, who's the Messiah? Who's the Son of Man? And Jesus says, you have both seen him, and now he's seen him for the first time, hasn't he? And heard him, and he's the one speaking to you. And he worships him. He falls down on his feet, and he worships him. Just so you know, this is the Bible's way of saying that Jesus is God. Because the only person that you're allowed to worship in the Bible is God. And so if this man is worshiping Jesus, that's the Bible's way of telling you. It tells you in other ways. That's the Bible's way of telling you this man is God with us, okay? Jesus is God with us. And I want you to see what has happened. He's just been kicked out of the synagogue, but now he's found a church. He's worshiping the Lord. He's going after the Messiah. He has a new community. Meanwhile, we have the Pharisees, and they're getting more and more and more stubborn. And they overhear this whole thing, and they say, we're not blind. We see. And Jesus says to them, because you insist that you see, you cannot get help. Your sins remain. You can't get to where you know you need to go. And I think we've talked about this. We all understand this, is that God doesn't help us with things that we're not willing to say are a problem and that we have. God doesn't help us with an issue that we're not willing to countenance to him. If somebody has a problem, say they're drinking too much, they don't get help until they say, I have a problem. I need help. And neither do the Pharisees, because they don't have an issue, and so they cannot come to Jesus. I want you to see verse 39, kind of summing up what happens to each of us. And then we'll pull some conclusions out really quick. Jesus said, for judgment I have come into this world, so that the blind will see, and those who will see will become blind. So when Jesus comes, when he appears, those who say, I cannot see, say, glorious light, there is the Messiah, and they come and they live. And then on the other hand, those who say, I already see, I don't need to see, they end up just becoming more and more closed. They can't see anything. And so Jesus divides people, and the division is over pride versus humility. And so how do we benefit from this sermon? Well, I think what we ought to do is pray that God helps us to see our need, that we would become humble people, that we would accept Jesus' help, that we would accept who he is, that we would not say, I have things well enough in hand. In our hearts, we would cry out, I am blind, help me see. He'll answer that prayer. Will you pray it? Let's bow our heads.